Leslie. Is it Ms. Andrews?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Natalie Andrews on behalf of Mr. Tyrick Leslie, the appellant in this matter. Your Honors, I am asking that this court reverse Mr. Leslie's convictions as there was insufficient evidence, even when the evidence adduced at trial is viewed in the light most favorable to the state, to support verdicts of guilt. And moreover, I believe it was reversible error when the trial court failed to instruct the jury on the lesser degrees of homicide, namely manslaughter. Within my briefs, Your Honors, in the title of the second argument, as well as a couple times within the analysis, I was less than precise in my wording. I mentioned manslaughter a couple of times as a lesser included offense. I certainly am not asking this court to overturn years and years of precedent establishing that manslaughter is not a lesser included offense of first degree murder. Instead, I am asking this court to apply the case of State versus Payne, precedent that has been in place since 1980, which in its analysis and the discussion as to why it was reversible error for the court to fail to instruct as to a lesser degree of murder. The first legal authority listed is Nebraska Revised Statute 29-2027. If you look closely, Your Honors, at the language in that statute, the words have not changed since State versus Payne has been decided. And as a result, it must be extended and applied in this particular case. On page 10 of...
Extended to felony murder?
Yes, sir. On page 10 of the Attorney General's brief, the state sets forth that this issue has not been decided before, whether that particular section applies when it comes to felony murder. And I agree. But I do not believe the state's position is accurate for a few different reasons. First, as the court is well aware, statutes are to be given their plain and ordinary meaning. There is no conditional language within that particular section indicating that it applies in jury murder trials unless the accused is charged with felony murder. There's no language whatsoever to indicate that there is a distinction. So I am asking the court to give that statute its plain and ordinary meaning that the words provide.
What evidence was there that manslaughter occurred?
Sure. Thank you. As for that, Your Honor, I believe that there's a couple different things. First, and I revert back to State versus Payne only for a factual comparison, Your Honor. In State versus Payne, Payne was a neighbor to the deceased, Bowersox. Bowersox was in the business of selling drugs within their trailer park neighborhood, if you will. And the reason that the deceased roommate was so confident that on that particular evening that their residence was locked and secured was because he knew that his roommate was selling drugs. So the doors were locked, and in fact, multiple guns had been loaded. And the next day, he's awoken by Payne, first by a phone call, then by him knocking at the door. And when they go into the room, according to the roommate, there's no evidence whatsoever yet that his roommate is deceased. Only upon removing the bed cover does he realize that he's been shot in the head. Now, I bring this up because it was reversible error in that case for the court to not instruct as to second-degree murder but not for manslaughter. And part of the reason this court reasoned that there was no error was because there was no evidence of manslaughter to support such an instruction, such as that there was no observation even by peace officers, by members of law enforcement when they observed the scene of the crime, that any struggle, quarrel, disturbance had occurred. Whereas here, actually, one of the detectives, Detective Brandon Hahn, he indicated upon observing this particular residence where the crimes had occurred inside and outside, arguably, that there was evidence of a disturbance. And as a result, he found this to be so important, so evident, that he made sure to convey it to crime lab technician Amanda Miller so that, of course, she could document the scene in whatever way was necessary.
Was there evidence of any aggravation?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not quite sure exactly what you're asking.
A sudden quarrel, aggravating factor.
Sure. So besides the detective's observation as to what he saw within the residence where shots were fired, in addition, why I think it's so imperative for this court to reverse Mr. Leslie's convictions is also because if you look closely at the testimony provided by Mr. Goodwin, specifically, I think the state, it was on page 43 of the Bill of Exceptions, Your Honors. The state cites that particular page as the intruder walking past Mr. Goodwin and shooting Miss Pope. And it makes it sound like that was, in fact, the fatal shot. But if you look closely at that particular page, Your Honors, actually what Mr. Goodwin testified to before the jury was that he heard a single gunshot. This is on page 483 of the Bill of Exceptions, Your Honors, lines 16 through 25. That he saw the intruder walk past him, that he was seated at the foot of the bed. This was a makeshift bed in the living room. It was not on a bed frame, so it seemed, at least from the photographs, that it was at a lower level than you would expect an ordinary bed with a frame to be. That he was seated there, he heard a gunshot, and he assumed that Miss Pope was shot at this point. He also states, immediately thereafter, that the intruder walks by him, picks up a laptop, and then strolls past him, at which time the two of them get into a tussle of some sorts, and there's more gunshots. So the reason I bring this up is because besides Detective Hahn's observation, which it's my position, based upon the court's rationale in State versus Payne, would be enough evidence to support a manslaughter instruction, but that in addition, it is unclear if that initial shot was in fact the shot that killed Miss Pope, because the doctor that performed the autopsy indicated that the one that had killed her was the one that entered through her abdomen and had traveled at a trajectory from front to back, left to right.
What was the evidence that was put forward at trial to support that a sudden quarrel was instigated?
I think, Your Honor, it's the evidence that I just discussed, that it would have been with
occurred after the shots were fired. The initial shots, is that correct?
No, let me clarify that. Sorry, that's my fault. So there was one shot that was fired before the tussle was ensued.
So at least one shot occurred before the tussle ensued. How is that a sudden quarrel? We have a gunshot in close proximity to one of the alleged victims, and then we have him trying to strike the individual or go at him in some manner. How is that a sudden quarrel?
Because, Your Honor, I don't think that it's clear, and I think
it's... self-defense? Isn't that responding to a real threat?
Okay, a couple things perhaps I haven't been clear enough on, and I apologize for that. First of all, it's not clear, and I think it's a matter for the jury to decide whether that first gunshot was in fact the one that killed Miss Pope.
Does it matter?
Second of all...
Does it matter?
It does.
There's a gunshot in the bedroom.
It does if it occurs during a sudden quarrel.
Well, it occurred before the sudden... I mean, your own presentation of the facts is gunshot occurred first, then the tussle occurred.
At which time there were more gunshots.
Who's engaged in the sudden quarrel?
Your Honor, it's Mr. Goodwin and the intruder.
And the existence of the sudden quarrel is applicable to the Pope death?
It could be, and I think that's an issue for the jury to decide, because what I'm saying
is... Under your view of the law?
Yes.
A sudden quarrel over here applies to the death of another individual not participating in the quarrel.
Right, if it occurred, because with manslaughter, it's either unintentional during the course of a sudden quarrel, or it's intentional during the course of an unlawful act. So it could have been unintentional during this sudden quarrel, and I think that's an issue for the jury to decide, because despite it being at this foot of the bed, this is not occurring in two different rooms.
Okay, well, Mr. Leslie wasn't an invited person into the home. Is that correct? The evidence is he was pounding on the front door. The victim came around, he accosted him, and took him into the house. The victim was taken into the house by Mr. Leslie. So he wasn't being invited into the home, and then a sudden quarrel occurred. I mean, wasn't the aggressiveness already happening by Mr. Leslie?
I, again, think that's an issue for the jury to decide, especially because they did, but they weren't exposed to an instruction on manslaughter. And what's interesting...
You didn't ask for an instruction on manslaughter, did you?
No, sir.
So it would have been the judge's duty if he saw evidence to give that instruction. Is that your argument here?
Yes, sir, it is. And in State versus Payne, it was not requested for second-degree murder either. And in fact, in that case, this court found that there was actually sufficient evidence to sustain the conviction of Payne for first-degree murder, and nonetheless found this to be such a serious error that the court reversed the conviction in State versus Payne of first-degree murder so that the jury could be exposed and provided with the second-degree murder instruction. And I think the same is true here, Your Honors. 29-2027, as I stated, does not provide any conditional language accepting felony murder. So it's my position it should be given its plain and ordinary meaning. In addition, if you think about this in a practical sense, if this statute was not in existence, if the words were not clear, first degree murder still does not have manslaughter as a lesser included offense under either theory of liability. So regardless of whether it's the traditional premeditated, deliberated murder, or if it's first-degree murder in the felony murder sense, that there was an underlying felony committed, which is enumerated by our statute, either way, Your Honor, manslaughter is not a lesser-included offense. So as a practical matter, it would not be consistent for this court to find that there is an exception for felony murder.
Isn't the difference between first degree, second degree murder, and manslaughter the mental state of the defendant?
It is and it is not, because of course with first degree murder, it can be proven with felony murder, in which the mental state...
Now, I'm not talking about felony.
Okay.
I'm talking about first degree murder, the other kind.
Okay.
Isn't first degree, second degree murder, and manslaughter, excluding felony murder, aren't they all differentiated only by the mental state of the defendant?
Yes.
And isn't felony murder, isn't the mental state of the defendant not at issue?
That is correct. It's not. But what I think is more important here is an argument that it should not be provided because it's not a lesser included. And
well, I'm trying to address with you the what I suspect we're going to hear from the state, which is that the legislature in enacting 2027 meant to place before the jury all of the proposed mental states for which there is any scintilla of evidence, but that with felony murder there is no mental state where manslaughter or second degree could apply at all, and consequently it would seem that The state is likely to argue the statute would not contemplate an instruction on manslaughter in connection with felony murder because it's just not part of the rubric. So what's your response?
Sure, a couple things, Your Honor. First, at the time the statute was enacted and the time that Payne was decided, this court had actually not determined that manslaughter was not a lesser included of the traditional sense of first-degree murder, but had decided that manslaughter was not a lesser included of felony murder. So I guess on a timeline of events, that does not square with what I believe the correct reading of that should be. I think that if we allow the state and allow Mr. Leslie's convictions to be affirmed with this statute into place, then essentially what we're doing is impeding upon the province of the legislature. Because what the state is going to do is to continue to only charge on, for example, felony murder. Not charge in the alternative, which they often do too. They charge first degree under both theories, and then the step instruction is provided as for second and manslaughter. Well, if you let this happen, then what's going to happen is the state at the trial level is just going to charge felony murder, and this statute is rendered meaningless, not only by the state of Nebraska as prosecution, but also, quite frankly, and what would be unfortunate would be by this court. The words are clear. They are so clear in 29-20-27. And if you look at some of the cases even cited by the Attorney General, I reviewed them all. When you look at the rationale for whether error was reversible or not in these cases, what each opinion hinges upon is whether the degrees of homicide were exposed to the party, whether it be jury or the bench, of the various degrees of homicide. Because quite frankly, what is the harm? This is supposed to be about justice and ensuring that the jury is exposed to all degrees of homicide. In, for example, State versus Masters, the court found that there was no evidence that could have supported a manslaughter instruction, but at the same time, if you look closely at that case, that's a bench trial. Of course, a Douglas County District Court judge is aware that there are 3 degrees of homicide, and as a result, it was not reversible error that the manslaughter instruction was not provided. For Alarcon versus Chavez, that was also a first-degree murder case, but what the court determined was that it was not reversible error because, in fact, the jury had been given all 3 degrees of homicide within their jury instructions, and that the court didn't need to address the error in the step instruction between second-degree murder and manslaughter with respect to the language because they had stopped at first-degree murder and found the defendant in that case guilty. So I do think that it is reversible error here, that the jury was not exposed to all degrees of homicide. I think that the statute is clear, and to hold otherwise, Your Honor, would be a great danger. The state, I also just want to mention in its brief, addresses Hopkins versus Reeves, which is a United States Supreme Court case. It was an 8-1 decision authored by Justice Thomas. And at first blush, it does appear that that particular case is controlling here. There is a line within that opinion that says, as a matter of law, Nebraska prosecutors cannot obtain convictions for second-degree murder or manslaughter in a felony murder case. Well, a couple of things. First, of course, as you all know, this state is allowed to provide its citizens with more protection than what the federal constitution affords. The United States Supreme Court sets a baseline. It does not set a ceiling. That is for this court to decide. Moreover, in that case, the only holding was that state courts are not required under the federal constitution as a matter of due process in capital cases to instruct on offenses that are not lesser included. Justice Thomas, in the majority opinion, was not engaging in statutory interpretation of 29-20-27. It was mentioned nowhere within that opinion, even though that came later in time by 18 years than State versus Payne. So, with all of that in mind, Your Honor, I am asking that this court reverse his conviction because I think it is the only appropriate application of the precedent of this court. As a last matter, because it was not addressed in my brief, The state raised an issue of plain error with respect to the appellant's sentence, and I do agree with each of her positions for the reasons that she sets forth, including that I think the intent of the trial court was clear and that this court would not have to remand the matter for resentencing. Nonetheless, it is my position that this court does not even need to raise or address that issue within its opinion, because his conviction should be reversed for the reasons I set forth. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Leslie assigns two errors, sufficiency of the evidence and failure of the district court on its own to instruct the jury on sudden quarrel manslaughter as, I guess, a lesser degree today of offense rather than a lesser included offense. I will start with the manslaughter instruction. First of all, Leslie's argument fails for two reasons. One, the statute doesn't apply to felony murder, and two, there was no evidence of a sudden quarrel. Justice Castle did a great job of setting forth my position. I think implicit in 29-2027 is that first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and manslaughter have some common element, and that common element is intent to kill for premeditated first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and voluntary manslaughter. And it is because of that common element that the statute requires a jury to declare in its verdict what the degree of homicide it is that it found. Felony murder is different. There is no required mental state for the killing. Instead, the state's burden is simply to prove the required mental state for one of the enumerated felonies in the felony murder statute. So to instruct the jury on degrees of homicide on a strictly felony murder case such as this,
what about the, there are essentially two types of manslaughter.
Yes.
So.
I don't think the statute encompasses involuntary manslaughter either. I think it's the distinction between first-degree murder, secondary murder, premeditated first-degree murder, secondary murder, and voluntary manslaughter because of the intent to kill. And I honestly, I couldn't, coming in here today, I tried to think of a circumstance where involuntary manslaughter would come into play where the state was seeking to prove intent to kill, where that was the case, that was the evidence, and couldn't think of one. Maybe Your Honors can, but it's the state's position that no, the 29-2027 also wouldn't encompass that, and it certainly doesn't encompass felony murder.
It, and even perhaps worse from the state's perspective, wouldn't instruction on manslaughter confuse potentially confuse a jury about what the required intent of a defendant was by mixing the apples of intent to commit the felony with the oranges of intent to kill?
I agree. Practically speaking, and that was my next point, is I don't know how this would work if you took my opponent's position, because they're starting with felony murder and a step instruction, and they're only looking at the intent for the enumerated felony, and they're not looking at the intent to kill. There is no relevance to it. So how do you skip to that next step of secondary murder for intent to kill when they are apples and oranges? I don't think, practically speaking, it works.
I think maybe the larger suggestion here is addressed to prosecutorial discretion.
Correct. And
so can you respond to the suggestion, I think, that's being made that all kinds of forms of murder, manslaughter, and so forth be put out there to the jury and so charged?
I actually think that when the state chooses to go forward only on felony murder, it's putting all its eggs in one basket, so to speak, and it actually could be putting the state at a disadvantage. It doesn't, the jury then, it isn't able to fall back on those alternatives, and so that's the risk the state's taking. So it's actually a risk for the state to do so rather than to proceed on premeditated murder and get that instruction on a 29-2027.
And I guess unspoken in response to Judge Miller-Lerman's question is that is a matter of prosecutorial discretion and not a matter for us to dictate.
Correct, or for the legislature. I think I've set forth for the sufficiency of the evidence. I understand that counsel is setting forth the proper standard here today in her argument. In brief, it was the accused rule, which this court knows was long ago overruled. And even under the proper standard, the evidence was more than sufficient. I've set it forth in my statement of faith. I will answer any questions if this court has anything on the sufficiency of the evidence. I've also briefed a plain error sentencing issue, which, while I understand that Mr. Leslie is in for life, he gets this extra 3 days credit, as I've briefed, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on that issue as well. If the court has no further questions, we ask that you affirm his convictions but modify his sentences as argued in brief. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the